This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 263 for Wednesday, February 28th, 2018. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me tonight, Megan Townsend, Nerdasmic on YouTube and your favorite social media platforms. Welcome, Megan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. It's one of those months. We were just talking pre-show about February just evaporating, and we've got time now to squeeze in one more episode of the Citadel Cafe before the end of the month. And I'm excited because I mean, not a spoiler, but like heads up, because I'm going to talk about it. I saw Black Panther, and I'm excited to tell everybody my thoughts. It'll be spoiler free, but I'm just champing at the bit because I just saw it 2 hours ago.
Oh, I want to go see it so bad. So bad.
Yeah, I think I'm going to start doing this matinee midweek thing. I've had a stressful work week, and technically this is work related, going to see one of the current movies that are out there, especially when it's a Marvel comic, you know, movie, that sort of thing. And so it's an easy sell when you're just like, oh, I really need a break. I don't just want to sit on the couch and watch Netflix. Like I wanted to get out of the house. You know, I picked up some sushi, and, you know, I went to the movies for my, essentially like it's a long lunch break, I guess. And, it was great because there was me and six other people in the theater. So it was
fantastic.
It was a good break. It was a good break in the afternoon. I had got up early, so I, you know, worked all morning. It was a good chunk. Do you normally go to matinees, or you prefer like an evening show?
I have gone to matinees. I like going to matinees. I definitely feel like there's less people. There's less stress to find a seat. But I find that just given my existing schedule, I usually end up going in the evening, or if I'm going with other people, oftentimes they're working during the day, so I don't really get a chance to go.
I used as teenagers, we used to opt for the late night show, like the 9:45 or the 10:30 show, because like during the week, because like we didn't care, we would have the time to get there, especially once we all had cars or access to a car, because we didn't have to worry about busing back and forth and stuff. But the issue I find now, of course, is that all of my friends in my current kind of peer group are, for the most part, married with kids. They're in bed by 10 o'clock or very near to it. So it's not something that happens very often anymore. And I find, as you might as well in the city, that the bus is not running after midnight is a problem.
No.
You know, trying to get home from a movie theater when it gets out at 12:30 just is not a possibility, right?
Big problem. Yeah, big issue. It's kind of annoying. It's part of the reason why I don't have a lot of time to go see movies. That's also part of the reason why I haven't gone to see Black Panther yet, because it's just, I haven't had the chance yet, just because of between work and school and everything. And all the times that I want to go see it, it's like, I'm not a big fan of 3D. I don't like seeing a movie in 3D first, because I find I get very, very overwhelmed, and I get very, it's like, where are there so much happening? Especially like from the trailer that I've seen of Black Panther, like there's a lot of action in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And I don't want to miss anything. And I find that with like 3D, I miss a lot. Like I don't notice little details, and I like to notice those little details. So I prefer to go see just the regular film. And those are kind of hard to come by these days for some reason.
3D is really hard to come. Like 3D is a gimmick, and I'm really hoping it goes away. Cause for 90% of the movies that they use it in, it adds nothing.
Yeah.
It really,
I remember, like I was talking about old school 3D with like a couple friends, and the one 3D movie that's like clearly distinct in my mind is like being like one of the first 3D movies was the third Spy Kids movie. Like for some reason, that's just like in my brains when I think 3D, I think, oh, Spy Kids for some reason. That's just, you know,
because that was like 3D IMAX sort of stuff.
Yeah. That's when 3D started getting like really, really popular, and it was like, not even really, it was just like, this is new thing. 3D is like the new thing. But like where you don't have to like, you know, have the crazy blue and red glasses. You can just, you know, it's normal colored glasses this time. So
I find, some CG stuff, like How to Train Your Dragon, I went for a second viewing of that, and I saw that in 3D, and I thought that was, that served it quite well. I think because it's CG cartoons and you're not looking at it as a real thing, it adds to the illusion of like these little, like this imaginary puppet world sort of thing. Like it really felt sort of special. It helped the medium. But for the most part, I find that it pulls me out of it. The movies that I've seen it in that it worked really well were James Cameron's Avatar.
Yes, that worked really well.
And I think I saw one of the Star Trek films in 3D, one of the new ones. And for that, for both of those, for both Avatar and Star Trek, it wasn't throwing stuff at you. It was pushing stuff back. It was when you looked at the Enterprise in space, like it really looked like it was a deep space because they allowed that kind of the Enterprise to come off the screen, but not towards you. It was just separated from the background as opposed to being this flat thing.
Yeah.
And that I thought was really immersive. Like that was something that I would kind of go for. I find that they dull colors for me. And as you know, I wear glasses, so it's a pain in the butt. To the 3D films. I much prefer to go to the regular screening. And that in also lies a problem because then rather than the four screens that they're showing it on, you've got one and only those times, you know, that you can go to.
Yeah. It's so limited and
yeah,
it's more expensive.
Yeah, it can be. It can be.
Yeah.
My tickets have gone up. My matinee price today was $11.50.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot for a matinee. Because normally, normally it's down in like the $9 range, I think, or $8 range from what I remember. But
I know like Tuesday is usually a good day to go to because they have the cheap nights. But I usually, if I can, I have a Scotiabank card, like a Scene card.
Mm-hmm.
So every time I spend like $5, I get a point or something. So. Right. I use that to pay my bills and I use that to pay for, you know, like important things. So like the more I spend on my debit card, like I'm buying my necessities, but I'm also getting points to put towards movies. Yeah. And it's great. Like I have been able to see so many more movies than I was before. Just paying like regular ticket fees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. So.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if I've gone to the movies in the evening in a long time. I think maybe the last time I went to an evening show was with you, and that was with Thor Ragnarok, but I don't recall the ticket pricing on those. Do you remember what we paid?
That was a Tuesday night.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday night. It was Tuesday night. That's why I'm not remembering it being expensive, because it would have been a cheap night Tuesday. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, while we're talking about movies, we might as well just dive right in. This will be a spoiler-free talk about Black Panther because it hasn't been out for very long, maybe only a week, 10 days, something like that. So far, I've really not seen much for spoilers online. People are just like, it's good, go see it. They're just like, you just have to go experience this movie for yourself. And there are even things that I would consider not spoilers that I'm still leaving out of my comments because it was just cool to experience some of this stuff, you know, as they reveal different things about this world. It was just cool to be there and experience it in the theater and rather than having it be told to you already. So I'm not going to get into any details in terms of like that sort of cool stuff that happens in Marvel movies. However, what I will say is that you really, really should go see it and you really should see it in the theater. It is a spectacle. Like it is a blockbuster superhero film. It is not a side character film. I would say it's probably a grander scale even than Thor. It's like they treated it like a Captain America movie, you know, like it's just straight up. This is Black Panther. This is the hero story. And this is the whole thing. And what's cool about it is because I know who he is from the Marvel Universe, Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I know nothing about the comics and nothing about the character in general outside of what maybe, you know, you look up on Wikipedia and stuff and general pop culture. But what's really cool is they give you that kind of backstory about Wakanda and Black Panther and who he is and what he is in the form of a father telling his son the story, like the history, like a bedtime story. In like the opening credits. So you feel very up to speed by the time you touch base with the main character, which is King T'Challa, played by Chadwick Boseman. And that picks up right up where he left off in the previous movies. So he was in Civil War with Captain America. And so in that movie, his father dies at the hands of a terrorist attack. And so he is now, he was the prince and now he's the crown prince and then he becomes king. So that's known already. And so that's
right.
Like almost on that beat is where you pick up in this movie with these characters. But man, like it's just such a great mix of tech and culture. Obviously it's,
I've heard that.
Yeah. Like they keep a lot of the, I mean, Wakanda's in Africa for people that don't know. And so they keep a lot of African culture alive in this high, high tech culture of Wakanda, which is a secret city. And that's again, not been, it's, I mean, if you've watched the trailer, that's been revealed. And they really handle that well. Like it does not wash away any of the tribal cultures that, I mean, they were probably all made up, or pulled from different existing tribal cultures and then kind of mixed into their own sci-fi kind of like, you know, versions or whatnot. And I think they handled it really, really well. They do this really great thing where, I want to say it's either Farsi or Swahili. I can't remember. I don't know what they're speaking, but they give you subtitles for the first couple of sentences and then they just start talking English. So it's really cool in that you're not reading subtitles the whole time, but you get that kind of cultural immersion where they switch to like, okay, these characters are speaking their own language and it gives you subtitles, but then they just kind of meld into English when there's no other characters that don't speak the language around. So you're not reading subtitles the whole time. It's really subtle, but
like
I really appreciated it. You know, like it's the nod, but it's not the, you have to read this movie because as you mentioned, it looks like a visual movie from the outside. And it really is. Like, you do not want to take your eyes off the screen because when stuff is happening everywhere. There's just so much to look at, which I thought was really, really cool. And I really enjoyed the overall concepts. Like I've mentioned tribes already, the idea of knowledge sharing, what that means, how that could benefit the world, things like resources and, the especially in the Marvel world where vibranium is like a special thing.
Yes.
So for those of you that don't know, that's what Captain America's shield is made out of. The only thing that I found that was a little bit odd is that all of Wakanda, their whole technology is all based on vibranium and they have a lot of it. So it kind of reduces the specialness of Captain America's shield, because that was it. Like there's a line in one of the Captain America movies where it's just like, this is all of the vibranium on the planet and it's in the shield to the outsider's knowledge.
Yeah, I will argue that, that is the only vibranium that is available to people not from Wakanda.
Yes.
Because I know Wakanda has been a secret forever. And I think the reason, because vibranium is so rare and it's so valuable, that's why this society is so rich and so wealthy, and they're able to do so much, but they're also trying to keep it. Like they're also trying to protect their city. Isn't that like, I mean, without saying too much, isn't that kind of like the plot of the film? It's like, oh, people have figured out that Wakanda is built upon this large deposit of vibranium, and that, aren't they trying to get it?
Yeah, so one of the villains is Claw. I can't remember his first name, but he was the arms dealer in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right.
He's played by Andy Serkis. And so he's like the...
He was Gollum in Lord of the Rings,
yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's got like a... I think he has like a South African accent, and he's... I mean, he's just a dirty, scruffy terrorist bad guy. Like, there's nothing incredibly important about him. He's just like, you know, he's a good actor, good character actor that's on screen just to be, you know, the bad guy, you know, the token, you know, the heroes have to stop this guy. And as soon as you see him, you go, yep, bad guy, you know, he's got that vibe about him. And so part of his purpose in the Marvel universe is the exposition of how important vibranium is, the fact that he stole a lot of it. I'm pretty sure that Ultron made his new body out of vibranium. I think that's how that worked. Anyway, because that's what he did. He stole it from this claw guy. And in the process, he also took off the guy's arm. So in this, he's got a fake arm and stuff. And it, like, so again, like, they pick up right where everything left off the last time that you've seen these characters. And Claw's purpose is to kind of exploit the fact that there's actually not a little vibranium, but a lot of vibranium. And, you know, he's an enemy of Wakanda because he's the only thief that has managed to break in, get some, get out, and not die. Like, and people have tried, but they have not made it. A nice parallel that he draws in some of the concepts is comparing Wakanda to El Dorado, you know, Lost City of Gold, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. It's just an analogy, but like that's, so for people that don't know what Wakanda is or what we mean, like that's what it is. It's a city of Atlantis. It's the El Dorado. It's this mystical fairy tale stuff. It's referred to as all those different kind of things. Those major concepts, I would say that the other major plot point is, without spoiling anything, it's more of a, what does Wakanda mean to the rest of the world? And how the people and the players in the movie disagree on that. And there's multiple tribes in Wakanda. So there's some politics that go on. There's some royal lineage stuff that goes on. Like this, so there's a lot going on. It's not just like, it's on the outside Wakanda, it's a superhero movie, right? So it's Black Panther and his, you know, team doing superhero stuff. But when you're inside the walls of Wakanda, he doesn't have to be Black Panther. He's King T'Challa, right? So then you get all the political intrigue and the history and their rich culture and all that kind of stuff. So it's really well balanced. It's eye candy. It's a beautiful, colorful movie. It feels good despite the battles and stuff that are happening. It's still a feel good movie. It's not necessarily like Captain America feel good, but you like the people, like you, all the main characters. When people are in peril, it's a Marvel movie and you don't know any of these characters. This is not the four members of, or the five members of the Avengers. So you know that none of them are going to die, right? So you're like, oh God, like, I don't know who any of these characters are. Like, is she a main Black Panther character or is she like tertiary and possibly not going to make it? Or he, I don't know. So you're just on the edge of your seat whenever there's a battle, because it's a lot of, you know, claws and swords and stuff. And you're just like, this could go horribly wrong at any minute. And I just, you know, I don't want people I like to not make it.
Right.
And I lay that on the feet of the casting. Really, I mean, Andy Serkis is okay. I think he does well as a performer, but the character was written a bit mad, which makes him less threatening, right? Like, you either have to be the Joker to be that goofy, and then people are really scared of you because they know what you're capable of. But when you're this kind of like tertiary claw character, it's like, well, you don't have the chops to be this kooky. Like, you did, now you're just being silly, and I don't find it threatening at all. But everybody else in it is really good. Michael B. Jordan, who I watched in Friday Night Lights a long time ago, is a very good actor, and he plays the main antagonist. I'm going to get some of these names wrong. Lupita Nyong'o Nakia. She's King T'Challa's love interest / partner. And I say partner because they portray her as an equal. It's not a damsel in distress thing. Like, she's a really strong, complex character, speaking to the politics and stuff involved. She's fantastic. Really, really poised. And get this, she's also the voice of Maz Kanata from Star Wars.
I know. I love her. Okay. I the very first time I saw Lupita, was in, she, it was during like the Oscars. Like, she'd won an Oscar for 12 Years a Slave.
Okay.
And she was so breathtaking. I was like, I had never seen 12 Years a Slave, but I saw her and I was just like, who is this woman? Like, she's stunningly beautiful. Mm-hmm. I've seen her in interviews and she's like, she's just poised in real life. She's just such a poised, graceful,
yep.
She's stunned. Like, I have new girl crush for sure. Like, yeah, she's amazing.
Well, throw her in there with Gal Gadot because she kicks ass as well.
Yeah.
Like, there is
great.
Everybody in this movie, regardless of what you think of them, can throw down. Like, it's really cool. Yeah,
that's what I've heard about a lot of people who are really excited about this movie, because it has a really, really strong sense of culture. Mm-hmm. It really, really honors like African traditions and different mm-hmm. tribes and different traditions and customs. And it also has really, really well detailed, strong people of both genders. And someone mentioned like some of the other villains as well. They still have this sense of like redeemability. They still feel like they can be redeemed. There are still interesting characters in their own right. Not Andy Serkis, but mm-hmm.
yeah,
I don't remember his
Michael
name.
B.
He's
Jordan.
Got like this.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like a lot of people are saying that his character is like he feels like he could be a redeemable character at some point in the future.
Well, and the thing is that they're bad. They're doing evil things because they're misguided, but not because the script says so. You get enough right. information that you say like, okay, I get it. I get why he's FUBAR. Like, you know, I understand why he's the bad guy and why he's like the way he is, because they explain it to you, which is fantastic. They don't, you know, it's not just like, you know, in Batman v Superman, he's like, why is Batman fighting Superman again? When did he become so grumpy? Like, it's not just in the script. Like, there actually is like real, in this one movie, not pop culture, not comics, not you have to bring it with you. It's like you get explained in the film why everything is the way that it is through dialogue, not through monologuing or exposition and stuff. Like, it's just through conversation. So you got to pay attention to what's being said. The other really strong female character is Guerrera. I'm terrible at this. I don't want to mispronounce, so I'm getting over.
Denai Guerrera.
Guerrera, yeah. And she plays Okoye in the film. She's the lead guard. So there's a set of female guards, similar to like in Star Wars with the Red Guard of the Emperor, like that sort of idea.
Is she the one with the white hair?
No, that's T'Challa's mom. That's the Queen Regent or Queen Mother.
Okay.
No, that's his mom. No, it's funny that you bring up the wardrobe and the dress is because these women are all in red and gold. They have the gold rings around their neck.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And, but they're always in bright red. So whenever there's this action sequence and stuff like that, like they're in armor that is flexible and allows them to fight, but they always have these like shoulder, like half draped cape sort of shawl things going. And so when they're doing these spins and, you know, flips and superhero stuff, it looks fantastic. Like, it's just, you just get this blur of like, you know, I think the red cape flipped around three times and now there's four people on the ground. Okay. Like, it's, you know,
yeah.
It's badass stuff like that. And she's iconic and fierce and, you know, has all that kind of stuff going. There's lots of stuff like that with these main kind of action-y characters where you know that they were absolutely saying like, okay, page 23 of this or page 18 of this comic book panel 4, we have to put that shot in the movie. Like, you can tell that some of these are like comic book panels, you know, brought to life, right? And the other cast members, just to kind of round everything off, is Letitia Wright, and she plays T'Challa's younger sister, and
Shuri is her name.
Shuri, yes, I forgot to write that down. I think you're right. And she's essentially the tech person. So she's younger. She's a smaller kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? She's not immature, but she doesn't have a physical role. She's not a guard. She's not a warrior. She's not in part of like the superhero stuff. She's the tech person. So she's the person in the chair while Black Panther's out doing stuff. So she's on comms with him and giving him information about where people are and all that kind of stuff. But, she's the one that knows all of about vibranium. So there's a lot of explaining to, Black Panther, you know, oh, this is your new gadget and it does this and stuff like that. But she's just so bloody excited about all of it. She's a computer nerd, right? Like, and she's charming. She's really, really fun.
She's so cute. I've heard stories that apparently she's like, the character's only supposed to be like 16 years old.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like she's like a young prodigy. And then I also heard in interviews, people were talking about like, oh, who do you think is the best character in Black Panther? Like, you know, like the typical talk show questions. And everyone was just like, oh, of course it's my character. But I guess Chadwick was just like, nah, man, Shuri is like the best. Like, there'd be no Black Panther if it weren't for Shuri.
Yeah.
So you're like, yeah, like she sounds great. Yeah. Even before I've seen the movie, I feel like she's going to be one of my favorite characters. Yeah.
And I mean, I've kind of glazed over the fact that Chadwick Boseman is fantastic in it. Like he brings a lot to it. He gives personality to the character, even when the mask is on. There's not necessarily wisecracks because it's not Spider-Man, but it's more of a sarcastic jabs between siblings, yeah. Right? So like, it's the kind of things like, Nakia is the love interest and they poke fun at him for being mushy around her. And he's like, I'm not mushy. What are you talking about? And then, you know, two scenes later, he's mushy. And then like the women are around. He's like, was he mushy? He was mushy, wasn't he? Like banter like that is just really, really fun. And,
that's
and
cute.
And I'm not giving quotes because it's much more complicated and more nuanced than that, but it brings so much personality and feeling to the character. He's not just a king, he's a guy. Like it's T'Challa. It's not necessarily king, you know, T'Challa. And last but not least is Martin Freeman, who plays returns to his role as the CIA agent Everett Ross, who he was in Civil War as well. And he's fun. He's funny but not silly, you know. And I think that's the difference, is that Andy Serkis's character was meant to be funny, but it was silly. Whereas Freeman is meant to be funny and he's just dry funny. Like it's the kind of funny that you want in an action movie. It's not slapstick. It's just him being Martin Freeman, you know, doing his own thing.
Yeah.
I really enjoy him. And he brought a lot to it. It's that one little tie to like the Avengers and the rest of the what's going on in America. Like everything else is all very Wakandan. So he kind of brings that element in there. And what it made me think though, because he's so good in it, because he gets way more screen time in this than he did in Captain America Civil War. I would love to see a super spin-off spy movie of Freeman as Everett Ross and Emily Van Camp, who plays Sharon Carter in Civil War. She's Peggy Carter's niece. So like, niece, Aunt Peggy. She calls her Aunt Peggy. So, and she was the blonde that was next door to Steve Rogers. Like yeah. She was protecting him, or was keeping an eye on him. But she's a CIA agent, and at the end of the movie, she joined the CIA in that film. I think that was Winter Soldier. Anyway, I think the two of them in like a spy movie would be fantastic. Because it wouldn't have to be, you know, you could have like little superhero nods or cameos, but it could really just be a straight up CIA, but the CIA dealing with like outworldly, crazy, you know, Wakandan, not Wakandan, but vibranium arms dealers or, you know, AI stuff. It could be super, but it could be not a superhero film. Anyway, I thought it would be really cool to see them in something.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. But that's really it. Like it's mostly about the cast. I mean, it's a good movie. It's a good script. It delivers on all the points. It is not a B movie. Like it's not a side movie to the Marvel universe. It is one of the big ones.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm excited to see it. I'm really, really jazzed to see it.
So what have you been watching?
I went to go see The Shape of Water. I'm trying to think what day it was. I think it was on Thursday of last week. I went with a friend and, I love Guillermo del Toro. I think he's one of my favorite directors.
Mm-hmm.
As kind of silly as they are, I really, really like the Hellboy films a lot, even though the second one was a little bit loose in terms of story. I think that Guillermo's vision is like, he's, you know, it's always going to look good. No matter what sort of film he does, it is always going to look fantastic. And even like Pan's Labyrinth, that looks amazing, even though it's also terrifying.
Oh, it's
it
dark.
Also looks amazing.
Very dark,
it still looks beautiful. It's like scarily beautiful. So yeah, I went to go see it, and I don't know what it was. I get kind of tired of like the contrived like heterosexual romance in, you know, in films these days. And this was definitely coined as like a romance. And my roommate and I were actually talking about it, and the words that she used were, "Only Guillermo del Toro would ever want to make me watch a movie about a heterosexual romance between a woman and an amphibian man. It's the only person who'd ever want to make me watch this kind of movie." And so when you're thinking about it, you're just like, this is, it's weird. And the whole time you're like, is this bestiality? I'm not really sure, but I'm trying to think of like how to describe it. I'll talk about the characters first. So we have, there's Sally Hawkins, who's playing, Eliza Esposito. And Eliza is like, they go into her backstory a little bit. She was an orphan. They found her as a baby, and she has like a couple of scars on her neck, like on either side. And so someone assumes like, oh, they, you know, someone cut her neck when she was a baby. And so, like, they kind of got her vocal cords. So she's mute. She can't speak, but she can still hear, but she signs the whole time. So what's really interesting though, is that no one ever actually, like, there's not a lot of subtitles whenever she's signing. It's only whenever she's by herself that, like, she signs. But most times people will kind of say what she's signing to them, like, almost as if they're trying to confirm what she's saying, which is really neat. So, again, not a lot of subtitles, like, in Black Panther. Mm-hmm. But the character is so... She's quiet and she's like, she's innocent, but she's also very like driven. She has like a very like, you know, monotonous day-to-day routine. She's like, you know, it's everything's down to like specific times. And she works as a cleaner. It's set in like, I think it's like the '60s, the late '50s, early '60s.
Okay. I didn't realize it was a period piece.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so it's, she works in this government facility as like a cleaner at night, and her best friend is Zelda Fuller, who's played by Octavia Spencer. And Octavia Spencer she's great in anything that she's in. I love her. She's fantastic. She's like, all she does is like the entire time that they're together, she just like tells stories and she's like complaining, but it's kind of funny. It's like, you know, that one person at work who's always just like, oh yeah, and I told Bruce, my husband, like, she just kind of, I don't know, she's fantastic. But Sally, as Eliza, she's very passionate. She's a very, very passionate character. And it's really, like, just watching her perform, because she had no words. She was not allowed to use any words whatsoever. So all of the emotion, all of the acting is done purely with her face.
Wow.
And watching it while everyone else has the, you know, the capability of saying lines and having nuances to their voices and things to kind of get their emotions across, she is purely acting with her eyes, and it's like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen ever. I don't know, it's so interesting, it's so unique, because that's not something that a lot of people get to do. I feel like I don't feel like there's ever really a disabled character as like a lead romance role that is not portrayed in kind of like a negative way,
mm-hmm.
I guess. But she's fantastic. And then, so the basic story is that it's a government facility, somewhere in, I think, New Jersey. I don't remember where exactly it's set, but it is set in like the late '50s, early '60s. And, this one particular guy, he's part of the military. He's part of like I'm not exactly sure what his position is. I was very overwhelmed. It was just so beautiful looking that I kind of forget a lot of details, but, he ends up going to the Amazon and finding this creature who's known as, you know, in the credits, he's called the Amphibian Man. And, the Amazons are people who live near the Amazon River, were, you know, worshiping him as a kind of god. Like, you know, he got a lot of sacrifices given, like they basically fed him a lot and he was worshipped as some sort of deity. But he's like, you know, he looks like a fish man. He kind of looks like Abe Sapien from Hellboy a little bit, but more detailed.
Yeah. Well, same, like a lot more same actor. Like,
same actor, yeah. And I love Doug Jones so much. I think Doug Jones is one of my favorite actors out there because he has such a hard job. He's always in like these big, like full, you know, silicone body suits and these full, like really elaborate face makeup, but he's still able to be so fluid with his movements and so graceful. And he's able to bring these characters to life in such an amazing way. And I'm so upset for him because I feel like he's snubbed by Hollywood so much, so much. Like all the award, like this movie has won so many different awards and it's been nominated for a bunch of different awards, and he's been nominated for nothing for this movie at all. And he's amazing in it. He's amazing in it. I mean, like he does, like, and to say like, oh, he doesn't do very much. I'm like, he has the hardest job out of everyone. He's in a water tank for a good portion of the film. Like he's just hanging out like in a water, like behind glass in water for most of it. He also does not speak. He is in a full silicone bodysuit, and he's like, he's able to make this creature, like this fish man, like an actual amazing romantic lead. It's the weirdest juxtaposition of a bunch of different things, but like it for some reason it works.
Cool.
In a really inexplicable way. I don't know. I really liked it. It was well written. It was really well written. It was so amazingly visual. It was very fantastical, and it's like it kind of leaves it like with a bit of an open ending too, which is what I like. No one's ever really sure exactly what happens, but it's so fantastic. It's stunning. It's amazing. There's a lot of queer concepts in there as well. Like one of the main characters, what's his name? Played by Richard Jenkins Giles. He's an artist who lives next door to Eliza. So he does like a lot of like concept art for like advertisements and things. And he's a gay man who gets, you know, who's kind of nervous about being out, but he's so endearing the entire time.
Right. Again, remembering the time frame, because it was set in the late 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and he goes to like this pie shop, and like there's this pie shop like down the road that he goes to because he has his eye on this guy who works there.
Yeah, okay.
Always gets the key lime pie, but apparently it's like disgusting pie. It's terrible. At one point he opens the fridge and there's just like his whole fridge is just full of these plates of disgusting key lime pie. It's really funny. There's just like little moments. There's like little moments of comedy that are thrown in as well. So it is a drama. It is very emotional and very emotionally driven, but it is, there are these little moments of humor in there as well, but it's also quite uncomfortable. The character's name is Richard Strickland, played by Michael Shannon. He is he's hard to watch, in the sense that he's a stereotypical, like, I'm a red-blooded American man from Texas or something. Like he's got, you know, guns and whatever. Like he's just super bigoted.
I find him, cause he played Zod in Man of Steel.
Yeah.
And I find, I mean, it's good casting for Zod and for this, like, you know, one-track mind American, you know, character Richard Strickland, but I find it hard to watch because kudos to the actor, they're doing their job, and that is the one-track mind that you can't change, but then everything out of their mouth you disagree with.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. Like, you're so frustrated watching this character, like, you cannot reason with them because it's almost like they're programmed. You know, it's like you say, no, but this makes more sense. And their response is like, does not compute. Sorry. You know, like, or no, sorry, just does not compute. We're doing something else. You know, I find it's very true of a lot of military-esque characters in film. I get really frustrated with, you know, things like Betty Banner's dad in the Hulk movies. Like he's that general that is always duty and is screwing the relationship or what little relationship he has with his daughter because of his interests and in the super soldier serum or whatever he's doing. And it just, but it's the kind of thing where you know that there is just no reasoning with that person. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah, no. I feel like as an actor, that's really hard too, because as an actor, you have to find something to sympathize with the character that you're playing.
Right.
And I don't know, for me, if I were ever given a character like that to play, like in a play or a film, I would have a really hard time with it. Because that's like, basically that those thoughts are like, go against every single core of my being.
Yeah.
It's like actors are so fantastic in that sense, because, you know, they may have a completely different mindset of their character, but they have to find something redeemable about their own character.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be something redeemable about it.
And it's hard for the script too, because if you're not careful, they just end up saying the same thing over and over again in six different ways. Yeah.
And I think like this character is, I'm trying to find a good word to describe him. He's very driven. Like he's, you know, again, for the time, he was like this, you know, self-proclaimed man. Like he wants to be a powerful military man. And at one point, like he's shopping for Cadillacs. And he was just like, I don't need a Cadillac. I don't need some, you know, fancy car. And this car dealer just ends up like managing to like sell him a Cadillac with like no effort whatsoever. Cause he wants this status. He wants this, you know, this sort of power. He wants to be known as like, you know, the guy who, you know, caught the specimen or whatever. Mm. He's very uncomfortable. Like at one point he ends up like losing a couple of fingers and there is a lot of like, not graphics. There's a lot of nudity in the film. I shouldn't say a lot, but there is like evident nudity and there is some sexual themes in there. But he's just uncomfortable the entire time. But I think he's supposed to be that character.
Yeah,
he's that, like, this is actively the person we are against in this film.
Yeah,
like we need someone to be just vehemently. We just need him to lose. Because I think the focus of the film is on the relationship between Eliza and then this amphibian man and her, because like she has like this really monotonous day-to-day life that she follows all the time. But then by like, you know, meeting this creature and, you know, wanting to help him, she completely goes against all of the social norms and everything that is usually expected of her to do what she thinks is right. But she also has like conflicts with that as well, because her whole idea is that she wants to let him go, but then she has struggles about like, but I also want to keep him. So it's very interesting. I don't know, it's a beautiful film. If you like artsy movies, this is great. If you like Pan's Labyrinth, this is great.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely on my list. Sounds like we're delivering some must sees to people listening at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time. Sure. It's a good time to go to the theater. Like Brock and I were talking last week about Pass or Play, you know, all the different movies that are coming out. Not even getting into summer blockbusters, just like this spring run of cool films. And there was quite a few that I wanted to go see. Annihilation is out now or will be soon.
I want to see that.
Yeah, that's on my list as well. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, and that is brought to you by you. If you go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, that's where you can see a bunch of people that are supporting the Citadel Cafe and helping us make more podcasts. My goal is to try and increase that by one person per month. We haven't done anything yet, so if you've been thinking about supporting us on Patreon, it's a great opportunity to go join the folks over there. We currently have 13 patrons, so be number 14. You get to join the Discord chat, which is where everybody that is a patron can hang out, talk about the kind of things that Megan and I are talking about right now. We had a really fun event last night where Ryan Murphy from the Gamers Inn, who's been on this show a couple times, he decided to stream some Minecraft because it was his first time playing the game and it was his first time on the Citadel server, which is a closed server that myself and some friends hang out and play Minecraft on. But most of them are part of the Citadel Cafe community already. So it's kind of, you get some Minecraft in the chat, you get some movies, you get some Lego. There's all kinds of nerdy interests that come up in there. So once again, that's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe if you'd like to support the show. Special thanks out to Nicole. She's been a longtime supporter of the show. So I really appreciate that, Nicole. Megan, you have the internet pick this week. What is up on the interwebs?
I have been seeing a bunch of ads around for this thing called a webtoon. It's like it's a webcomic, essentially, but Webtoon specifically allows artists to post their comics out almost like YouTube style. So it's like you can do like a weekly update thing.
Cool.
And allows the creators to post music along with their stuff as well, which creates a whole different level of dynamic sound to this comic. And the one that kind of got me into it was this little story called Siren's Lament. And I've always kind of like, I love the fantastical. I love, you know, kind of beautiful things. So it's about sirens, like mermaids, but the concept of the story is just so unique and the art is stunning, and it's free to read, which is really cool as well. So by subscribing to the artist and by reading the comic, she gets money off of ad revenues and things. So cool. It's like YouTube for comics, and it's beautiful. I highly, if you like, cute little stories, like little romance stories, but also with, you know, some fantasy elements in there as well. Siren's Lament is beautiful. It's still ongoing. It's about a year old now. There's 86 panels or episodes, I guess, and it's got over a million subscribers who are reading it right now. So, jeez. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's nice that there's enough to dive into as well. I find sometimes with a frustration with webcomics is that you get into it and somebody only has like 20 comics or 10 pages, and you're just like, well, I got halfway through the sort of introduction and there's no grip, like there's no nothing to grab you to have you come back. But 86 updates, like that's enough. That's an hour or so to sit down and read and get kind of caught up in it.
And I will only read about like 5 panels of something. If there's no gripping story, I usually don't bother anymore. Mm-hmm. Or if it goes too quickly, I don't really bother anymore. And if it goes too slow, I don't bother anymore. So like, it's a really, really fine balance for this one, but it's got enough history and it's got enough character, and the characters are really endearing and very different from each other. And it just looks so nice that you just can't help but keep watching or keep reading, I guess. And it just, I don't know. It just, I found myself blazing through it within like 2 days, and then I got to the end. I'm like, Oh no, I'm totally caught up. What do I do now? Cause it was just, I was just so involved in it. And there's like, you start to care about a lot of the characters, and it's like, everyone's very sympathetic and I don't know. It's beautiful. It's unique. I haven't seen anything like it before ever.
Right on. What's the artist's name?
I don't know her actual name, but her web name is Instant Miso. I think she can find her on Twitter as Instant Miso as well, and I believe her Instagram is, I think her Instagram is just Siren's Lament.
Okay.
But she's done a couple of little web series. I think she's based out of the States, I believe.
Right.
So it is written in English. Like some comics are translated on Webtoon. So people from all over all over the world can post Webtoons. They can post them in their, you know, native languages, and then people can offer translation services.
That's really cool.
To give like, it's great. So it's really, really inclusive, and you don't have to have the music, but there's a couple of episodes of Siren's Lament. Well, at the top, it says, please make sure you have your sound on for this episode. And it just adds an extra level of just immersivity into this story. And it's very nice. And the music is composed by, let me find out here, what's his name? There's like a CD they have out for it as well, because it's gorgeous. His name is, he's just known as Kenny Comics on Instagram and Twitter. But he's composed all of the music for them, and it's like a beautiful piano medley.
I'm noticing a growing trend. On Comics Coast to Coast, we always kind of have sent out the advice, I guess you can take it or leave it, in that if you can at all put your name on your stuff. I feel really silly in a professional capacity reaching out to someone for an interview and calling them by whatever crazy screen handle they've decided to keep. Unless you're doing questionable content, I can understand if you're doing content that you may not want to have known, as you know, as you writers do that all the time when they write under a pseudonym or a ghost handle or something like that. I can appreciate that. But if it's something that you are proud of and it's, you know, PG-13 or whatever, and it's just a really nice body of work, as this looks like it is, I really wish you would put your first and last name on it, just because I really want the credit to be out there. And it could be just me and my old man hat, but I find it difficult. And I, as someone who does podcasts and wants to reach out and talk to artists as a publisher as well, I lose interest really fast if I can't figure out who you are.
Yeah. Oh, I just found her name, Caitlin Narvaza.
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
Good stuff, Caitlin. Put your name on your stuff.
I think that's also for some people. They also want to have a sense of anonymity as well.
And I can appreciate that. I mean, like, the internet, it can be a gross place. Like, I know that there's some issues there, but like I really feel like in the long run, I feel like the handles are decisions that are made when you're in your late teens, early 20s. Mm. But if you continue to do this and you end up being professional at it in your late 20s and early 30s, it becomes a real problem if that handle isn't something that you can roll into a brand. Because like most of them I can't pronounce, right? Like, because yeah. They're not even real words. They're like whatever Xbox gamer handle that they just decided to roll over. I find it sticks out in particular. What's coming to mind for me is Minecrafters. That's different though. That's not necessarily artists. But I find that if you're going to be producing content, at least have, you know, a game handle that's easy to pronounce, or have it be a name, even if it's a made up name, you know, as opposed to like, you know, Ardog 617. That to me is just like amateurish. Yeah. And, you know, again, probably on my old man horse, but, you know, I find it a lot easier to get a hold of artists and stuff like that, or at the very least have a way for people to contact you professionally, have it, you know, have yourself be out there as, you know, your web handle. But then if there's a professional link that's out there to get back to you, whether it's a LinkedIn page or something like that, that just allows people to kind of just, you know, find you and talk to you professionally if they need to. Cause I find it really weird to address an email to, like, you know, rdog77.
Yeah, no, I feel that for sure.
Cool. Well, that's webtoons.com. And I did a search for it. The easiest thing to do is to just do a search for Sirens Lament. And that's Sirens with an apostrophe S. If you type in the Sirens with just an S, it doesn't come up. But the URL is just too long. We'll have it in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
But that brings us into the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. You can find out more about the show and check out those show notes at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email the show and let us know what movies you've been going out to see at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, and find us by name, of course, on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online at joelduggan.com. You can find me by name on Instagram and Twitter. Those are my two main places where I hang my hat. And don't forget to check out starcrossedonline.com. My webcomic is back. I have drawn, but have not yet posted. It is done. It's a matter of going onto the website and throwing it up there. Comic number 200. That is this week. So if you're wondering what a stack of 200 comics looks like, it's about 2 inches thick. Also, don't forget to tune into my other podcast, Comics Coast to Coast. We're recording a special episode with Alex Redfish this weekend because he's in Russia. First time we're talking to a Russian artist, and he is a special effects animator. So it's the first time we're doing that as well. We talked to animators before, but he does 2D animation for like RPG video games and stuff like that. So like explosions and sword fights and all that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah. And his stuff is fantastic. Google Alex Redfish. It's spelled just like it sounds, and go to his Vimeo channel and watch the stuff that he's made. It is really, 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 really sharp. So I'm looking forward to talking to him as well. Megan, where can people find you and all the cool stuff that you do online?
Nerdasmic is my handle on everything, mostly Tumblr, YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.